It's time for Ruination Repeat, recapping last week's shows.
I'm not the only one who could use a little bit more of the big fatty.
Oh, dear Gussie, dear Gussie, dear sweet Gussie.
Welcome to this week's Ruination Repeat. I'm King.
And I'm Gale.
So I want you to take a second and really think about how you mark the passage of time.
Oh, that is such a big question.
Right. Like, are you one of those people who suddenly looks up from a screen and is, I don't know, completely shocked that 2026 is already halfway over?
Which it is, somehow.
It really is. And does it feel like your days are just blurring into this one endless, indistinguishable gray paste?
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way.
Absolutely. Because today, our mission on this Ruination Repeat is unpacking last week's broadcasts, specifically looking at the window of June 29th through July 3rd of the Big Fatty Online Universe.
And this is a universe where the host simply refuses to let time slip away unnoticed.
Exactly. He tracks his reality through these massive macro-level astronomical events, but then also incredibly specific 8-year anniversaries and like hyper-detailed grocery store receipts.
It really serves as a fascinating psychological study in how a person anchors themselves to the present moment.
Totally.
We get to watch someone construct an entire reality framework, you know, starting from these massive cosmic milestones before zooming all the way down into the highly specific, friction-filled micro details of domestic life.
Yeah, and right out of the gate, on Monday, June 29th, the WIC is grounded by the announcement of the Strawberry Moon.
Right, the Strawberry Moon.
And let's unpack the context there, because a lesser broadcaster would just say, hey, look, a full moon. But he actually provides the specific historical and seasonal weight of it.
He really does.
He notes that this is the traditional Native American nickname for June's full moon, which marks this incredibly brief window when wild strawberries are ripe for the harvest.
I love that he takes a moment to manage listener expectations, too.
Oh, yeah.
He explicitly clarifies that the moon doesn't actually turn pink or red in the sky.
Right, because you know people would be going outside looking for a giant red orb.
Exactly.
Right.
And the mechanism at play here is what makes it so engaging. By tying the celestial calendar to an earthly seasonal harvest, the passage of time becomes tactile.
Becomes real.
Yeah, and he doesn't just observe this cosmic event, you know. He internalizes it through a shared domestic ritual.
Yes, the Friday at Fatty's gathering.
Right. He creates this culinary monument to the moon with a massive spread that he refers to in his established vocabulary as the big meat bruss.
And the menu for this bruss, meaning breakfast, for those not in the know, was an absolute structural engineering feat.
It was huge.
We are talking thick-cut bacon, two entirely different types of sausage, haddock brown potatoes, grits, and scrambled eggs.
Just a massive amount of food.
But to explicitly honor the Strawberry Moon, the crown jewel of the spread was a sour cream pound cake.
Secured from the Vaughn's Bakery.
Naturally. Secured from Vaughn's and topped heavily with fresh strawberries.
I just love that he takes an event happening hundreds of thousands of miles away in space and turns it into, well, an excuse to gather his chosen family and eat pound cake.
It's a beautiful mechanism for community building.
It really is. And that theme of controlling and marking time bleeds directly into his next major milestone, which happens to be deeply personal.
Right, because Tuesday marked exactly 8 years since he retired from what he affectionately refers to as the coal mine.
The coal mine, yes.
And he brings up a societal cliche here that I really want to push back on. We constantly hear this narrative that retirees inevitably get bored, you know, that they lose their sense of purpose.
Right, the idea that they just fade away.
Yeah, but he addresses his audience point blank to state he hasn't been bored a single day since he left the workforce.
Not one day.
He insists he is simply a genuinely happy person. And frankly, looking at his intense, relentless schedule of tracking the moon, the daily meals, and his community, I think we need to rethink retirement.
How so?
Let's compare his current life not to a quiet retreat, but to manning an active watchtower. He is arguably busier observing, documenting, and managing his world now than he ever was working for someone else.
I mean, a watchtower usually implies looking out for external threats, though.
True, true.
I would argue it's more like manning a completely sovereign control room.
Oh, I like that. A control room.
Yeah, because he isn't slowing down, he has just seized complete agency over the curriculum of his days.
Right.
When you stop punching a corporate clock, time can easily become the enemy. His intense documentation is this vital psychological tool to maintain that agency as he ages.
That makes perfect sense. And that desire to assert control over time explains why he treats the calendar year with the exact same reverence as his retirement date.
Exactly. Wednesday, July 1st marked the absolute halfway point of 2026.
And to initiate the second half of the year, he executes a very specific traditional first of the month declaration.
The rabbit. Rabbit declaration.
Yes.
For good luck. And the historical context of this is fascinating. It dates back to early 1900s Britain, where children would say it to secure a gift or good fortune for the new month.
Wow, early 1900s.
Yeah. It's a superstition born out of the psychological need to exert some small measure of control over an unpredictable future.
Right, because we all want some control.
But the way he frames it for a modern audience is this bizarre, highly entertaining amalgamation of pop culture.
Because he references both Sarah Jessica Parker and Lord Voldemort in the same breath?
Yes. It is an incredibly layered pop culture cocktail.
It really is. But we need to pivot because the broadcast crashes hilariously back down to Earth right here.
Oh, it really does.
We go from this high-minded cosmic tracking of the moon, superstition, and calendar years directly into the inescapable physical realities of having a body.
The friction of the physical world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Controlling the calendar is a psychological exercise, but controlling the physical friction of an aging homeowner is a totally different battle.
The physical friction this week is just relentless.
Yeah.
We absolutely have to analyze the saga of the new turlet seat.
The turlet seat, which is his localized in-group phrasing for a bidet.
Right, the bidet installation.
So his longtime friend, known in the universe as the Nip, recently purchased one. And naturally, the host decides he needs one for his home, the villa, as well.
Of course.
But acquiring it is only step one. He broadcasts the severe physical aftermath of attempting to install this plumbing fixture himself.
Oh, he holds nothing back. He vividly describes the intense, lingering soreness in his gluteus and his maximus.
The gluteus and maximus?
Yeah, he spent all this time crouching, twisting his lower back, and contorting his body just to check the water connections to ensure the installation was foolproof.
And his stated motivation for enduring this intense lower back pain. It wasn't just for himself.
No, it wasn't.
He tells the audience he'd do it so his guests can, in his exact phrasing, shoot water up the butthole.
It is the ultimate slightly tragic act of hospitality.
Tragic, yeah.
He sacrifices his physical comfort for the hygiene of his visitors. And that theme of irrational decision-making extends directly into his consumption habits this week, which bring up some fascinating points about retail psychology.
Wait, I have to stop you there and challenge the logic of what he did next.
Oh, the Hamburger Helper.
Yes. He admits on the air that he purchased a box of Hamburger Helper Deluxe. For a man who meticulously plans a gourmet big meat brus with two types of sausage, boxed meat paste seems wildly out of character.
It really does.
But his justification is that he had a 40% off coupon for Kohl's burning a hole in his hand.
Which is so funny.
Kohl's is a department store. Hamburger Helper is sold at a grocery store. Are you telling me this coupon applied to the pasta?
No, it didn't apply at all.
Right.
And that is the absolute beauty of the retail psychology at play here. It's the halo effect of the sunk cost fallacy.
How do you mean?
Well, he had this massive discount occupying space in his brain, putting him into a state of heightened transactional awareness.
Okay.
The psychological urge to save or maximize value bleeds over across physical locations. He was so primed to utilize a discount that he ended up making an irrational culinary purchase at an entirely different store just to satisfy the itch of consumption.
That makes total sense. And the reality of that Hamburger Helper immediately caught up with him.
Oh, instantly.
He makes it, eats it, and immediately gets on the microphone to issue a public service announcement that it was terrible, warning the audience not to waste their money.
Yeah. To recover from the physical defeat of the bidet and the culinary defeat of the Hamburger Helper, he wisely retreats into curated media consumption.
A safe space.
Right. He finds deep comfort in reading a book titled The First 50 Years of Apple Snacking.
Which is such an unbelievably niche topic. Why that specific book?
He praises it specifically for its architecture. It features very short chapters and self-contained side stories.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. When you are physically sore and mentally fatigued by bad pasta, you don't want to engage with a dense, sprawling narrative. You want manageable cognitive loads.
That is so true.
And he pairs this reading with rewatching the 2020 Crema, meaning Christmas, episodes of The Great British Bake Off.
Ah, Crema. He notes how odd it is to look back at those particular episodes because you can literally see the social distancing protocols in effect on screen.
Right, the separate benches and everything.
Yeah. It serves as the surreal time capsule of a global crisis, but it's safely wrapped in the warm, low-stakes comfort of a British baking tent.
It's the perfect escape.
The juxtaposition in this universe is just brilliant. Think of him as a spaceship captain. He can meticulously navigate the stars, track the lunar cycles, and calculate the exact halfway point of a calendar year.
But down in the galley.
Exactly. Down in the galley, he is physically defeated by a box of hamburger helper and the plumbing connections of a toilet seat, like a captain who can't open a jar of pickles.
The grand scale of his intellect constantly colliding with the granular reality of his physical body.
Yes.
And because his physical world is currently restricted to the villa, and because he is nursing those very sore glutes, he has to rely on his highly organized digital community to expand his footprint.
He uses them as a decentralized human hard drive to gather intelligence across the country.
He really does.
And this is where we really need to look at the sociology of how this broadcast operates as a social engine. This week, his initiative called Lurker Week finally included.
And it resulted in a massive win.
It did. A listener named Patty Bacon finally delurked.
He had previously stated he was worried sick about her absence.
Wow, worried sick.
Yeah. And when she finally emerges, she sends a message with the subject line, Delurking Diva.
Delurking Diva. I love that.
She opens the message with Ole Big, which she helpfully points out is hello backwards.
And she doesn't just check in, right? She actively contributes to the ecosystem by pitching a concept for a dating app designed to help single girls find a man.
Which she confidently wants to call Manhunt.
Manhunt. Incredible.
It's a vital contribution. And it brings up a crucial element of how this community operates, which is in-group language.
Oh, totally. We've mentioned Bruss, Turlet, Crema, and Ole Big.
Right. Sociologically, creating the spoke terms for mundane things is a proven psychological tactic to build intense loyalty. It creates a linguistic fence.
A linguistic fence meaning you're either in or you're out.
Exactly. If you understand the terms, you are on the inside. You aren't just a passive listener anymore. You are a sticky, active node in the community.
Which perfectly explains the incredible bureaucracy that keeps the community organized. Because July officially kicks off Follow-Up Question Month.
Yes. Which is overseen by a fictional department called the SSQD.
The So-So Question Desk, meticulously run by a listener named Kathy Marshall.
And bureaucracy in this context isn't tedious. It's a form of community care.
Right.
They are formally auditing questions from months ago to ensure no one is forgotten.
Like the chocolate question.
Yes. For instance, they debate the logistical nightmare of sending a heart-shaped box of C's dark chocolate for Valentine's Day.
Because they calculate that if it were delivered now, in the relentless summer heat, it wouldn't be a gift. It would just melt into a puddle of chocolate ooze on someone's front porch.
And nobody wants a porch covered in chocolate ooze.
Nobody. They also followed up on a deeply vital question submitted by the Laughing Buddha regarding whether or not the host actually likes oatmeal. But what truly drives this digital ecosystem is the relentless daily tracking of listener milestones.
Yeah.
They celebrate birthdays, which the show clinically refers to as exiting the birth canal.
Exiting the birth canal.
Yeah.
Fantastic. As well as anniversariums. He functions as a one-man public records office for hundreds of people.
It's staggering.
This week alone, he logs the anniversarium of Hot Cub and Bestie Bill.
Right.
He checks in on the emotional state of TLB James, who is currently navigating the psychological transition of an empty nest.
That's a huge life transition.
Yeah. He shouts out Brother Sinatus out in Denver and Cat D from Tennessee, creating a bond over their shared history as former coal miners.
He even included a very touching tribute to the late Baby Jaw. He weaves the living, those in transition, and the departed all into this daily, continuous tapestry.
He really does.
But the absolute peak of this decentralized intelligence gathering this week, the thing that really got the community fired up, was the gas game.
Oh, the gas game reached a fever pitch as petroleum prices across the country unexpectedly started dropping.
Listeners literally mobilized as field reporters. We had the Laughing Buddha checking in from the International Spam Museum in St. Paul, Minnesota, reporting gas at $3.37 a gallon.
I mean, the International Spam Museum? Amazing.
Right. And Moose P reported from Raleigh at $3.25 a gallon. Baron Frosty called in with $3.99.
And the host himself managed to secure $3.23 a gallon.
But the absolute undisputed crown this week went to Phoenix Dave down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Phoenix Dave
yeah.
reported an unheard of $2.98 a gallon.
Tune 1998.
The host was genuinely stunned, noting on the air that he never thought we'd see the day where a community was actively celebrating 298 gas.
And I have to question the intrinsic value of this entire exercise. Why on earth does an audience of thousands scattered across the globe care about a completely random gas price at a single station in Baton Rouge?
It's a good question.
Nobody listening is going to drive to Louisiana just to fill up their tank. It has zero practical economic utility.
The underlying mechanism there is that it isn't about economics at all.
Okay.
You have to view the gas game as proof of life ping.
A proof of life ping.
Yeah, it functions as a communal sonar system. When Phoenix Dave reports his price, he is sending out a ping that says, I am here, I survived the week, my feet are on the ground, and I exist in the exact same economic reality that the rest of you do. It's an analog method of proving they are all still connected in an increasingly isolated world.
Communal sonar. I absolutely love that framing.
It really works.
And bringing all of that digital community energy back into his physical space naturally culminates in his preparations for the midsummer holiday. It really showcases how, just like his retirement, he dictates his own absolute rules for celebration.
Right. He approaches the upcoming July 4th holiday on his own terms. He excitedly rebrands it as Independence Dance Day.
Independence Dance Day.
Yeah.
And he makes a fantastic self-aware joke about his local senior size class.
He says that given the demographic of the attendees, they will likely all be showing up in their NCDIFIC.
Depends in dancing.
Depends in dancing. It's a great bit of levity.
Mm.
But psychologically, he views this specific weekend as the heavy anchor point of the entire summer. Yeah, it is the definitive midpoint between Memorial Day and Labor Day.
And his preparation for this milestone is entirely pragmatic. He gets his 2024 Ford Maverick truck, affectionately named Earl Grey, professionally washed so it looks respectable for the holiday weekend.
Gotta have a clean truck.
Exactly. And then he executes a highly strategic surgical run to Vons to secure the absolute essentials, which are Oreo thins and teriyaki marinade.
The indisputable cornerstones of any good Independence Dance weekend.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But the way he engages with the actual national celebration is deeply revealing.
Oh, for sure. He notes on the broadcast that the world's largest fireworks show takes place in Washington, D.C. on Saturday night.
Yeah, he immediately flat out dismisses the idea of watching it live.
Right.
And his reasoning is incredibly simple. The broadcast doesn't start until 11 p.m.
Yeah.
He absolutely refuses to stay up that late. It does not matter if it is the biggest, most expensive spectacle in the country. 11 p.m. is a hard boundary.
It's a non-negotiable.
He opts to just record it or catch a replay on PBS the next day instead.
And that flat refusal is the ultimate embrace of personal boundaries.
It really is.
It is a beautiful realization that as you age, the metric of success changes. You stop compromising your peace, your physical comfort, and your meticulously guarded sleep schedule for external national spectacles.
Right. The world can explode in color and noise at midnight if it wants to, but the frugal fortress shuts down on its own unyielding schedule.
The ultimate luxury of age is realizing you don't owe your attention to anyone else's timeline.
Wow, that is incredibly well said. And if we look at this entire week of broadcasts as a whole, it really is a masterclass in how to stay grounded in a chaotic world.
Absolutely.
He uses the massive macro events like the Native American Strawberry Moon and the exact midpoint of the calendar year, and he weaves them directly into the micro events.
The physical toll of bidet installation.
Yes. The irrational retail regret over Hamburger Helper and the exact price of a gallon of gas in Baton Rouge.
Right.
He uses every single one of these data points to create a fiercely protected, highly structured, and deeply joyful reality.
He is actively writing the script of his own life every single day, rather than waiting for the world to hand him an itinerary.
And that leads me to a final question for you, the listener. We've spent this time talking about how these daily analog routines, the strawberry moons, the quirky anniversaries, the manual checking in on friends act as an ultimate defense against the isolation of aging.
Yeah.
But what happens to the generation behind us? If you rely entirely on passive algorithmic feeds to tell you what your friends are doing, rather than sending out those manual sonar pings in a community.
Are you actually anchoring yourself to reality, or are you just floating?
Exactly. Are we losing the vital skill of marking our own time?
It is a critical question, because if you don't build your own watchtower and define your own rituals, An algorithm is more than happy to schedule your life for you.
So true. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Exploration of the Sources. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
We invite you to join us back here for next Sunday's show. Wish everyone a happy and safe remainder of their July 4th weekend.
We'll see you next Sunday here on Ruination Repeat.